This is Professor Allen, and welcome to The Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will select often, sort of at random. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 130th episode of The Quarter Bin, we're looking at Uncle Scrooge Adventures from Gladstone Comics, cover dated March 1990. And there will be a guest. But first, a little feedback. On episode 128, The Last Days of the JSA, we heard from Sir Martin of Grey. Boy, that's a book worth 25 cents or whatever I paid for it at the time. A rollicking adventure that felt really weighty. The idea of the JSA members as avatars or whatever of the Norse gods was bizarre. These guys are massive heroes in themselves and don't need an artificial promotion. But I can see what Roy Thomas was thinking. Ragnarok has the idea of a never-ending cycle built right into it. So even though they were removed from the DCU and sort of, kinda dead, they were able to be brought back at any time, and thank goodness they were. Jeremiah Jones Goldstein said that he listened to a couple of episodes on a recent road trip. Your analysis of Last Days of the JSA was excellent, definitely worth the price paid. We were also included in a general comic podcast tweet from Jeremiah. Big road trip coming up to visit family. I've got plenty of my favorite podcasts queued up. Shows like Relatively Geeky, Cosmic Treadmill, and Fire and Water make taking a long trip by myself much more fun. Well, thank you for including us in that, JJG. On episode 129, the Marvel Magazine, we heard from Luke Giaconetti with the brief message, definition of a quarter bin steal. Matt Moore saluted my sacrifice, as he put it, in covering four full-length issues in one episode. That's going to require some intense fortitude, sir. Well, Matt, it would have if they'd been bad issues, that's for sure. But fortunately, that was not the case. Gotham, a.k.a. Dr. G, from Pulp to Pixel, said that he has this magazine, and that he loved these, as he termed them, bulk story issues. I love that way of describing these super thick, super packed comics, bulk story issues. Podcasting's Michael Bailey said that he'd been waiting for this episode. I may have to binge the other ones in the series. You're hitting me right in my Marvel feels. A few days later, he did confirm that he was re-listening to parts 1 and 2. I'll probably be doing this as long as Alan does these, because I love the stories he's discussing so much and love his commentary so much. Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate those kind words. Slangword Scott said he loves the magazine, sad that they didn't last longer, and really annoyed, annoyed. That you got them for only a quarter each. I picked them up at Shutter cover price. Still worth my money, though. Well, I can't speak to your wasteful, profligate use of your money. That's between you and your bank account, but I get the jealousy and the annoyance. I mean, I get that a lot. Luke Giaconetti agreed with my verdict. Legitimate quarter bin steal. He also commented that if he ever finds these in the wild, he's picking them up, and I cannot argue with that plan. Sir Martin of Grey responded with, fab, never saw these in the UK. Aw, that's a shame. Karen, from Between the Pages, focused her comments on the true highlight of the episode, my opening secret origin, courtesy of Herman Lowe. Loved your new secret origin intro. Hope you use it again in the future. Well, with a ringing endorsement like that, I think I'm going to have to. And we heard from the newly crowned Listener of the Year, Nathaniel Wayne. Dear Professor, I feel like given the sheer amount of content coupled with the fact that multiple inclusions virtually guarantees at least one of them was going to be worth a measly quarter, that we can just assume the magazines are always going to be quarter bin steals of the highest order. That, my friend, is a very fair point. Obviously, there's lots I could talk about, but I'm just going to pick one detail and ramble on it for a bit. I wanted to touch on the subject of LMDs, since you brought the blasted things up. I pretty much hate them too. Not so much in concept, but in how they're used, because ultimately, they just serve as a get-out-of-jail-free card. Whether used in the way that they were here to have a shock death and immediately reveal that it was fake, or as a go-to retcon for bringing back a character who previously was thought to be dead. Nope, that was an LMD that died. Aside from just being a lazy writing crutch, they also often break logic because it requires characters to have preposterous foreknowledge that they need an LMD in this exact situation. Believe it or not, I actually don't mind the Doombots. See? It's this sort of wisdom and insight that it takes to become Listener of the Year. So I think that's worth repeating. I actually don't mind the Doombots, because that's specific to a single character, which also made me realize that I think LMDs could work if Nick Fury was the only one who ever used them. That'd take some justifying, like maybe the kinds of probing and scanning necessary to make them as so invasive and painful that nobody else wants to do it, or maybe Fury is a jerk who just won't share the technology. But if they were just his thing, I could kind of roll with that better. But since they're such a broad shield thing, that means basically anybody can get their hands on the gosh darn things. They're just too readily available. Lovely work as always. Doom be with you. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne, and also with you. Those episodes received social media love from Chris Ouellette, Clinton from Coffee and Comics, Gene Hendricks from The Hammer Strikes, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Kirk Spencer, Sir Iowa's Joe, Paul Matthew Carr from the Nexus of All Realities podcast, Al Sedano, Big Easy 777, Comics in the Golden Age, Ed Moore from Teal Productions, Patrick Delmore from Next Generation's First Generation, Logan Garrett, Jeffrey Brown, the creator of the Valkyrie Quartet, Manuel Carmona from Truthful Comics, Vinny Gianfredi III, Mike Peacock, Old School Ross, Delvin Williams, who, by the way, is an excellent selector of restaurants. I'm just saying. Sean Urbanski, Bethany Skepton, Kieran, Chris from Bat Books for Beginners, and Laurel, a.k.a. Mountain Flower One from the new Huntress podcast. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate the feedback. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, I and a guest will talk about Uncle Scrooge Adventures number 20.
What is Council of Geeks?
Well, despite the name, it's actually just one kind of pretentious guy on YouTube who rants at camera a lot and just goes on and on about things like Doctor Who and Marvel movies and Star Wars and...
I meant, what's the Council of Geeks podcast feed?
Oh, that. Well, it kind of depends on when it is you're looking at it.
What does that mean?
Well, it's been a lot of things at a lot of different times. Originally, it was just longer versions of roundtable talks that the guy who runs the thing used to have. It was the home of 90s Comics Retrial for a while.
Oh, I liked that show.
Yeah, but, you know, then he did Executioner's Song and it broke him, so he doesn't do that anymore either.
Oh.
There was Go Home Hollywood, You're Drunk.
Winner of the Relatively Geeky Networks Award for Best New Podcast in 2017?
Yep, that's the one. That's over too. His co-host had a kid and, well, he didn't bother ever trying to find somebody else.
Oh. So what is it now?
Well, at the moment, it is home to See a Space Cowboy, where he is just going back through Cowboy Bebop and taking it one episode at a time, putting his thoughts up after not having seen the thing in about 15 years.
Okay. Well, what will it be after he's done with that?
Stick around and maybe you'll find out what's next. Or catch up on the old stuff. It's still there.
This is a very strange promotion.
Yeah, well, he's a strange guy.
And we're back. And by we, I mean me and longtime friend of the network, all the way from the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. It's Luke, Jack, and Eddie. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you once again for having me, Alan. Always wonderful to be here in the quarter bin. You know, you say you find your joy in a price point, and I've, having four kids and a wife and a house, I'm coming around to that way of thinking. So
it's not that crazy. Speaking of pinching those pennies, You seem to me to be an obvious choice to join me on this episode, as you are an unabashed fan of the Ducks.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And when you said, oh, we're going to be talking about Uncle Scrooge, and I said, oh, and you know, that immediately perks my ears up. But as any good Duck fan, you say, oh, well, who did it? And you said, oh, Carl Barks. And I said, I was saying to my wife just before we started recording that I've established a little bit of a brand here on the Quarterbin podcast for doing books starring funny animals that maybe you don't want to emulate too much, because we got Uncle Scrooge, and you'll recall we previously did an issue with Cerebus.
Oh, there
another,
you go.
You know, long-running funny animal star who you really don't want to behave like, if you can hold it.
See, for me, it's just more about Scrooge McDuck as personal finance mentor, economics advisor. You know, I studied with him back at old Duckburg State.
And, out there in Calisota.
You know, a lot of people think of these as comics, but they're kind of how-to manuals also.
Yeah.
Well, we will talk about those creators as we get to their stories, but we are looking at the special double-sized issue of Uncle Scrooge Adventures, and of course that is Scrooge with a dollar sign for an S.
Yep. Ka-ching.
This had a cover price of $1.95, meaning I acquired it at an impressive 87% markdown, and due to the powers of scanning and email, Luke acquired his for even cheaper.
Even cheaper than that. One thing that always amuses me, a lot of these Uncle Scrooge reprints, in fact, Disney reprints in general, this book was published at the very end of 1989, but all through the late 80s, early 90s, these books were very relatively common to find as reprints, and they were reprinted by a publisher named Gladstone. Now, Gladstone Publishing is named Gladstone after Donald Duck's cousin,
Gladstone Gander,
the luckiest duck in the world. We recently, my children and I were watching the new DuckTales, and Gladstone Gander popped up, and I about lost it.
Awesome. Has the inventor been on?
Oh, Gyro?
Yes, Gyro Gearloose.
Actually, it's very funny because traditionally Gyro Gearloose has been kind of like the country bumpkin, you know, good-natured, easygoing inventor. And that's the role he played on the original DuckTales. And you got to be careful with DuckTales because the hardcore Duck fans don't like DuckTales. Okay. But in any event, on the new DuckTales, Gyro has become sort of like a Silicon Valley hipster inventor.
A little Elon Musk, a little...
Yeah,
okay.
A little Steve Jobs, so... If anyone has not watched the new DuckTales, I heartily recommend it. It is interesting, first off, because Uncle Scrooge is voiced by David Tennant in full Scottish brogue.
Yes.
That's just neat in and of itself. But it's interesting the things that it borrows from the original DuckTales, the things it introduces that are new, and the aspects that it goes back to the Carl Barks original for aspects of Scrooge's character and how he behaves. Which nice. Were not always there in the original DuckTales. So it's very much a show for many audiences. And we both alluded to Carl Barks was, even before there were creator credits,
yes.
Especially on Disney books, on funny animal books, Barks was known in the comic book industry among the fans as the, quote, good duck artist. And so all of the, you know, the most well-known and remembered Donald Duck stories, including the one that introduced Uncle Scrooge, and then the most well-known and beloved Uncle Scrooge stories were by Carl Barks. So Barks's work kind of forms the basis that everybody else kind of builds on.
Is the legend that it was sort of fanzines and fans that sort of finally sort of figured out who the artist was? Or because Disney was not doing, like you said, they were not doing creator credits at that point. I'm not sure which came first, sort of.
Yeah, I believe that's the story I have always heard, that it was the fanzines and the fans talking back and forth and saying, well, look at this panel. This is clearly drawn by the same guy who did this story, that kind of thing. They said, and if you look, this story doesn't line up with this one, but this one does. And, you know, so that's how it kind of grew. And then eventually the, you know, Barks became, was able to sign covers and stuff like that. So that's how he became known. And it's funny because there are two very popular and well-known duck creators here in the West. And I say the West in this case, meaning specifically known in North America, because the duck books are extremely popular in Europe, up in Scandinavia. And they are both featured in this particular issue. So it's actually a very nice little kind of tour of different versions of Uncle Scrooge and the different Scrooge creators in this in one double-sized issue.
We have the other one, Don Rosa, who did the cover. And on that, we've got Uncle Scrooge retrieving cash from a tree, which is very important because this forest is being cut down by a machine operated by them Beagle Boys.
Oh, no.
This is the Paul Bunyan machine. And I think it's dramatic. It's attention-getting. I like Donald looks panicked. And Scrooge, he looks somewhere between determined and crazed.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of where he fits best.
Yes. And that's definitely a Rosa Scrooge, determined and crazed.
Bit of a sneer. Almost a sneer, but...
Yeah.
We got a lot of stories in here. We will go, the synopsis will be very brief for each of these, but we will start with the story depicted on the cover, the Paul Bunyan machine. Even though the cover was Rosa, the story was written and drawn by Barks, and this originally appeared in Uncle Scrooge 28 from 1959. We have Uncle Scrooge's burglar detecting rheumatism is acting up again. That actually sounds like a superpower, but anyway. Because it turns out that the Beagle Boys have created a contraption that will cut his vault in two. That's the Paul Bunyan machine. He tries to stash his cash at the local bank, but they refuse to take any more of his money because he's already overstuffed their vault. So his plan is to trick the Beagles by mailing his money to Idaho, where he sent Donald and the nephews. They hide the money inside hollowed-out trees. And when the Beagles do chop open the vault, which they know is full of something, they find nothing but bins of metal washers. And with no other use for their machine, they nab a government contract. This was pre-shutdown.
Yeah.
To cut down trees in the same Idaho forest, which the government has just bought from Scrooge's company, which Scrooge wasn't sure because he was specifically avoiding outside news. Off the grid, we'd call it these days.
Yep.
So the rivals battle it out again, and using some techniques that would make Ewoks proud, they defeat the Paul Bunyan machine. The boys get sent back to prison. All is good, and Scrooge's money and safe is safe until on the last panel, a magpie makes off with one bright, shiny dime.
This is a classic Carl Barks type of story, in that it starts out with one of the familiar premises, which in this case is the Beagle Boys are going to work some scheme to rob the vault, and then Scrooge coming up with a solution that at first seems to work, but then becomes more of a problem than the original problem was, and enlisting the aid of Donald and the nephews to work for him and, you know, essentially get paid. Scrooge's going rate was 30 cents a day. And that has never actually changed. So
inflation, we don't need no stinking inflation.
Yes. The other aspect of this that I think is very much a traditional Barks thing is Scrooge's worrying. Scrooge is always stressed out and worrying in a lot of the Bark stories, especially these ones with the Beagle Boys or Magica trying to rob him. One of my favorite Bark's gags crops up in this when Scrooge has been thrown out of the bank. He goes to his worry room. And he is walking in a circle and has worn a path in the floor from where he is walking. And then when the nephews come back, he has walked a path now 3 or 4 feet
deep. Yes, yes. Wonderful. The, now, this is another character trait that I sometimes might share with Scrooge, in addition to, financial aspects, is that if thinking is good, overthinking is even better. He does get some intricate plots. Let's just put it that way. Some intricate plans. was the only part I didn't like was the coincidence of getting the rivals together out in Idaho.
Yes.
From sort of a plotting standpoint. I mean, they sort of vaguely tied it in. Well, it was Scrooge's land, but still the Beagles were out there really by accident.
Right.
That second half of the story, but that is a minor quibble.
That's kind of how the Beagles operate, though.
That's true.
Happenstance and chance and accident.
Luck.
And,
so.
They've never successfully pulled anything off.
Yeah, that is true.
Speaking of the Beagles, after they break into the vault and they discover it full of washers, and we see Scrooge is depositing, see what I did there? All of his money inside hollow trees. We then see the Beagles walking in a circle worrying about what to do also.
Oh, my lands. That's the problem. That's the classic villain dilemma. They spent this much money building their contraption.
Right.
They have to get some return on investment.
Oh, yeah. There's no ROI if it just sits here. The other gag I really like in this is when they give Scrooge the idea, just move your money, which is like the very first issue of Uncle Scrooge involves Scrooge emptying his money bin to avoid the Beagles robbing him and then defending it from where they did it in the second half of the story. But so he gets the nephew's wagon and loads it up with cash and it breaks. So he says, oh, I'll just put it in my hat. And he puts it in his hat and his hat rips out. And it's like, oh, good thing I got deep pockets in this coat. And then the pockets of the coat rip out. Until we see him again when he goes to Idaho, his hat is now ripped.
Oh, what? Yes. Yes. Amazing.
And knowing Scrooge, I doubt he bought a new hat. So he
probably had
to fix it. Yes. So.
In terms of, I think for each one of these stories, sort of try to pull out our funniest or favorite, and they don't have to be, does not have to be a funny one, but in terms of visuals, to me, my favorite was the size of this machine where they're working on it, and we see little teeny tiny Beagle Boys working on this machine, and that got the scale just right, I thought. In terms of the funniest lines, I thought there was one, the nephews talk about their plan, and they refer to throwing monkey wrenches into the Beatles' plans. And Scrooge says, great idea. Order 12,000 monkey wrenches. Anything else stand out to you in either of those regards?
Oh, well, the scale of the Paul Bunyan machine, when Scrooge and Donald and the nephews see the machine, it's chopping down acres of trees. We see it's chopping down like a row or like three trees deep with this giant axe and grinding it up. We do get a funny repeated visual of Scrooge with it like looking shell-shocked, like passed out on the ground with his eyes all giant.
Yeah.
I like that visual for Scrooge because he's always worried about something, which was kind of Barks' thing because, that very first Uncle Scrooge solo story was called Just a Poor Old Man. And he starts it by saying that, oh, Donald, if you were successful like me, you wouldn't have to worry about anything. And then he spends the whole issue worrying.
Yeah.
I always love seeing Scrooge worrying. On the monkey wrenches, the Beagles have converted their Paul Bunyan machine to grind up anything that it chews up. And then it turns it into a little factory to stamp things out. So they turn the monkey wrenches into cannons and tiny little monkey wrenches.
That is an attention to detail.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, we're talking about, you know, these stories originally being anonymous. And now at this point, I guess through Fantagraphics, you know, they are reprinting all of the Scrooge books as the Carl Barks Library.
Yes.
I guess I say Scrooge, but all of his duck work.
All the duck works. Yeah, they do separate them into the Donald Duck Library and the Uncle Scrooge Library. And they've also printed quite, yeah, so they've printed quite a lot of them, and they're all in fancy hardcovers. So
really beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. They're worth it. I know they're outside of the price range of this particular podcast.
Well, the ones I picked up from the library were right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Now from there we get a delightful one page gag. This is a Barks one from 1953 where Scrooge is locked in his toughest checkers game ever until it's revealed that he's playing himself in a mirror. Now, there are some unanswered questions here, some plot issues that are raised, but I thought this one was fun. And cards on the table, you had Jay to play with. I had an older sister, so, you know, whatever.
Yes.
So I used to play various games against myself.
Right.
When I was a youngin. So, again, I'm learning how much Scrooge and I have in common in this issue.
Yeah, I can see young Alan pounding the desk and saying, okay, we'll make it for $1 billion.
I think I still owe myself a couple hundred million.
Yeah.
The interest on that.
Yeah. Well, the thing about is that every issue of Uncle Scrooge that I've ever read has at least one or two one-page gag strips. Very common for funny animals. And Barks did not like doing them. But that said, his are usually pretty funny.
Yeah.
So
I think he likes those sprawling plots, you know, where you can do more. And obviously, it's like quite a different skill set. And, you know, that one was pretty darn good. We get a 10-pager by Don Rosa next, On a Silver Platter. Rosa was a younger man than Barks. Barks passed away in, I think, 2000, at about the age of 100.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Don Rosa is still with us. He's in his mid to late 60s. So this one was from 1997.
I don't believe he was there this year, but Don Rosa is a regular guest at Heroes Con Charlotte, North Carolina. Even if you're not a Ducks fan, if he is there, go talk to him, because he's a very gregarious, very, very easy to talk to gentleman. He's extremely kind. I brought my three hardcovers of The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck, which is kind of his magnum opus, where Rosa took all of the Carl Barks stories where Scrooge told his history about growing up in Scotland, being a riverboat captain in the Mississippi, hunting diamonds in South Africa, you know, finding a copper mine in Wyoming, and he weaved them into one narrative.
So I did some Roy Thomas level work.
Absolutely Roy Thomas level stuff. And it is this great story about Scrooge's origin and how he goes from a wee lad in Scotland to this miserable old miser in the castle at Dismal Downs when Donald and the nephews first find him. And it's great, great stuff. But he is a very, very generous with his time, very easy to talk to, very nice guy. If you ever get an opportunity to talk to Don Rosa, I would greatly appreciate
it. Always has
a great selection of prints. I have one he did of Scrooge swimming in the money bin. And the other one, which I really love, is of the three caballeros.
Yes.
Which, peek behind the curtain, was an absolute favorite of Luke when he was 4 and 5 years old, watching the three caballeros just about every day. And again, with modern DuckTales, Jose and Panchito just appeared on the show as well. So,
something you think about conventions, Don Rosa might be an interesting addition to the Doom sketchbook. Anyway, just saying, that could be an interesting look.
Dr. Doom, perhaps?
Hey. So, in this one, Scrooge receives a silver platter in the mail, and he makes the mistake of putting his beloved first dime on it, because the platter was sent by the evil Magica Dispel, and is an enchanted portal that connects with a matched platter in her magic shop on the slopes of Mount Vesuvius. Let's just say much slapstick ensues. And through some ingenious use of water, Scrooge recovers his dime along with some other magical trouble. Brief, you know, much shorter, compact in its storytelling, but action-packed. And like I said, this one was Slapstick City.
Yes. Yeah. And no nephews, just Scrooge and Donald dealing with Magica and her crow, Ratface. I am betraying my age, I think, because I was first introduced to Magica the Spell on DuckTales.
Ah.
So to me, she talks like on DuckTales. Oh, darling! With her really bad Natasha voice. As an aside for Doctor Who fans on the modern DuckTales, Magica is voiced by Catherine Tate. So it is David Tennant and Catherine Tate working together once again. But the thing with Magica is that there's always some ridiculous supernatural aspect. And this silver platter that is a portal, there's just so many great gags with this, just back it and is. Forth.
You have many, many things that are half in one place, half in the other, including Donald's butt at a few points, at least.
Yeah. When Scrooge sits on the platter and his rear end pops out, and Magica does it. She just glares, and her word balloon is just the exclamation point. The other one, this may be my favorite one in here, is that Donald or Scrooge is yelling that we've got to keep the portal open. And so Donald says, the best defense is a good offense. I'll slow her down. So he reaches through the portal with his hand, grabs her by the throat, and then flexes his arm to hit Magica in the head with the silver platter.
That's not bad. That's
Donald could figure some stuff out if he gets an opportunity.
There was this ongoing subplot of Scrooge has hired some agents to keep tabs on Magica's house. So they're, you know, across the way, you know, with their, you know, all their spy equipment. And they're saying, no, she hasn't left. Nothing's going on. That ends up being my funniest line. It's the last line of the story because, you know, they know nothing of what's happening in the portals. But on the last panel, they report to Scrooge that, no, she hasn't moved from her shop at all. Are there any further instructions? Yes, you're fired.
You got to wonder sometimes. It's like you get what you pay for, Scrooge, you know. These guys didn't cost a lot for a reason.
And I've got to say the first line was pretty good too, which is Donald bringing in a big mailbag. What should I do with these letters asking for money? And Scrooge says, "Well, mail them out." No, actually, the people asking you for money.
Yeah.
Scrooge, that concept quite hadn't gotten into him. That was.
Yeah. I like Donald wearing the little mail clerk hat, which I think is, because it says mail clerk on it, which is funny.
So it started and ended with these jokes, you know, the verbal jokes, and then the other 9.5 pages was basically, you know, artistic equivalent of slapstick.
Now, what's interesting on this one is that this, and this is very typical for Rosa's work, this was first published in Europe, actually in the Netherlands. So it first appeared, I'm gonna butcher this name. It's Donald Duck Extra.
You got that right.
Yeah, it was a Dutch Dutch publication, but it had an English title. So they gave me a big break there. Op in Presenterblader is what I believe it was presented as in the Netherlands. I apologize to any Dutch speaking listeners out there.
Now you really helped me out in gathering information about this issue because of this. But where do you happen to be looking up to find that information?
Well, you know, on a lot of different shows, especially over on the Two True Freaks Network, if we need comic book information, we go to Mike's Amazing World of Comics at dcindexes.com. Well, that they have some Disney information over there, but if you want Disney funny animal info, there is a site you have to go to, and it is an index that is called Indux. INDUCKS, Indux.org.
And I believe they did the shield thing, and they actually came up with some words that actually spells that out. But
oh yes, yeah, it's I found this site quite by accident about 10 years ago, and I've been referring to it ever since. If you want to fall down a rabbit hole,
my lands.
Yeah, this is a way to do it. It is a just an absolutely amazingly indexed site that is in. I'm looking at the page here for On a Silver Platter. There is no fewer than 6 languages presented on this page, because this is not a site that necessarily caters to English speakers. Oh. It's a site that caters to globally, because of the global reprinting of various Disney Duck stories over the years. So, for instance, this On Silver Platter, first, as I said, published in the Netherlands, it's been reprinted in Brazil, Bulgaria, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Iceland, Italy, Latvia, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Russia, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and the United States. So at the time in the 80s, when the United States market was limited just to reprints, in Europe, they were getting new comics every month. And that's where Don Rosa made a name for himself, was working in these books that were published in Europe and then eventually translated to the United States. So I thought it was great to get a Rosa story that originated in Europe, as that is the way that a lot of his stories were originally presented.
Right. And that actually does lead us into the next one, The Custom of the Country, a 15-pager that originally appeared in a Danish Disney publication in 1981. That is, assuming I'm reading that right.
Yes.
And I think this reprint was the first time that it appeared in English.
I believe that's right. I believe that is right.
So in this one, we have Scrooge receiving gifts of exotic animals from the Mir of Hunza, a Himalayan kingdom that the ducks had visited before. A little continuity there. These gifts are in exchange for lucrative mining rights that Scrooge has now acquired in these lands. The problem is that the feeding requirements for all these animals make them much more of a burden than a gift, and these gifts just keep treating him worse and worse and worse. I thought this one was very good, and that's actually kind of weirdly a decent lesson.
Yes.
In that giving someone a gift should not be a burden to them, though many gifts are. You know, so be careful, parents or friends or spouses. Gifts are gifts. Burdens, responsibilities, duties, jobs, those are not gifts. Those are something else.
Scrooge gets doesn't want to deal with some, or wants to get rid of something, so he hires Donald and the nephews to take care of it. I do like this story also, because it does feature when they go back and have to rescue the goat that they have unceremoniously dumped back in the home country. The nephews break out the Junior Woodchuck
guidebook. Yes. I was glad to have that reference. Yes. And they certainly do save the day, which you can pretty much assume if the nephews are in the story, they will save the day.
Yes, absolutely. And they're one of the few right-thinking people in Duckburg. It's basically, in my experience, them and Grandma Duck are about the only ones who are the right-thinking, and Daisy to an extent. Yeah. Although, depending on the story, Daisy can be a little out there, too, sometimes. Yeah,
she can get a little flighty.
Yeah. But I like this one. I really like the art on this one with, we have them kind of, they're climbing up the mountainsides near the snow line, because they're in a Himalayan province here. And so there's all these wonderful vistas and stuff that they're exploring. There's a great panel where we see the boys are, they say, to catch a chamois, you've got to think like a chamois, alley-oop. And they're jumping across the rocks, and we're looking down, and we can see the plain down below in the valley. It kind of panel that wouldn't look out of place in a Tarzan story or, another traditional adventure story, but it just has three ducks, you know?
Yeah, I like the couple pages before that. It's when they're going in, when they're first landing. Grassy spot at the foot of a mountain with a waterfall nearby. I mean, it's very pretty, pretty art. And this is things I found in specifically picking out Disney books, duck books in particular, from the cheap bins you get some really globe-trotting stories sometimes,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's a full page, you know, a full issue, a 25, 28, 30 pager, whether it's Scrooge or just Donald or Donald and Mickey or some combo, they are jet-setting all around the world in adventure. And those stories tend to be my favorites. And this one yes. certainly falls into that category.
Yes. And that was one of the, we talked before about Carl Barks being the quote, good duck artist. That was one of the mm-hmm. aspects of his stories that originally stood out to people was that, you know, it wasn't, the stories were a little more, I don't mean mature in like a mature reader sense, but they were a little bit more involved, a little bit better developed.
Right.
They weren't just page after page of gag. There was more of an adventure to a lot of them. Right. And so I think the stories that tend to get reprinted from other countries of origin tend to be the ones that kind of fill that role.
Yeah, they tend to be quests of some kind. We have to go here and get that, and from that it takes us to here and there, and so you get that sort of travelogue approach.
Very, very cool. This story has some of my favorite gags of the entire mm-hmm. book. Scrooge has directed Donald on setting a trap, and then he says, cover it with some branches and get undercover in the tent. And Don says, now you're talking. I could use the snooze. And he goes in and goes to like immediately. It's like Donald is so committed to being lazy. And he said, I said undercover, not covers. And then when he's trying to wake him up, he is apparently dreaming of Daisy. Because he's like, cuddle dove. Daisy. It's like, geez, man.
There's a point in there where there's a Scrooge announces that he's taking the cost of, you know, some of Donald's failure. He's going to take it right out of his salary.
Yeah.
And Donald's answer, what salary?
Salary.
You know, the idea of Donald as Scrooge's fixer.
Right.
Something about that just doesn't. I mean, he works cheap. I get that's the big advantage, obviously. But the nephews using the info from the guidebook and the snow line and knowing the animal's behavior and how to actually do the job.
There to save the day once again.
So. Yes, beautiful.
And
beautiful.
I do the final gag. The mirror gives him another gift. After he took such good care of the goat, it's a literal white elephant. Because Don says, why the long face, Uncle Scrooge? You disposed of your white elephant. And then he goes, cripes, a real white elephant.
Of course, the boys know that elephants, they just eat plain, ordinary hay, except for the highly pampered pet, which does not. It has its own special, unique diet. I mean, it could be worse. Could have been a vegan.
Or a vegan that does CrossFit, but that's, you know.
Which one would they talk about first?
Which one would they talk about first? Exactly.
Now, we go to another one-pager from 1954. Again, another Carl Barks. He said he didn't necessarily like doing these, but boy, could he. This is Scrooge just walking to the office, and various newspaper hawkers are yelling about him making $1 billion in an oil strike. 50 cents, 50 cents, extra, extra, all the news for 50 cents. But he walks by all of them to get his paper in the reading room of the public library to learn that, in fact, yes, he did just make $1 billion in an oil strike. They were right.
I love this gag strip. This is fantastic. I mean, I was reading these last night, and I literally laughed out loud at this. This is great. Scrooge to turn his nose up at all the newspaper hawkers to go to the library, and then standing there impatient because they're
waiting
not
waiting for them to open.
Yeah, like I said, Barks evidently did not like doing these, but this legitimately is still funny every time I read it.
This one is hilarious to me. And it may be that, again, it cuts very much to the quick.
Yeah.
My desire to read as many free things as possible, be they at the library or library-based apps or public domain or Project Gutenberg. Again, I'm learning. Stella is right. Dude, there's a lot that I have in common with Uncle Scrooge. So,
yeah.
Or I should say with the great man. Yeah. Well, with the great duck.
Just the look of joy on his face in the
yes.
in the last two panels. And the library opens, and then when he's reading about making money, he just looks so happy.
And he didn't have to spend 50 cents to learn it.
No.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just what I like about these stories in general is we've had all of these different lengths. We wrap up with another Carl Barks story. This one's an 8-pager. So we had, the 15 pagers and 20 pagers and 10 pagers. However they did the math, figuring out what was going to go into a particular issue, you sort of wonder how all that worked out. But you legitimately have stories of all different lengths and sizes. It's pretty amazing. This is one, I could not find a title for it inside the story, but it was referred to in the index as Faulty Fortune. And Scrooge falls for a scheme in which coupons in cereal boxes represent ownership of 1 square inch of panhandle country. So he sends the ducks across the country to purchase cereal, accumulating as many inches of land as he can, convinced that he can find oil there, which he sort of does. Again, I thought this one was great. 8 pages, in and out. There's a plot. There's conflict. There's resolution. There's humor. There's everything you could ask. Now, I said I love the sprawling 28-pagers, but a direct, compact story like this, it just, like I said, it gets in, it gets out, and it does its job. Everything you could ask for.
Yeah. What's great about these is that, agreed, when you think of Uncle Scrooge comics, most of the time you think about those longer stories. And when this first appeared, Faulty Fortune first appeared in Uncle Scrooge number 14, as you said, from 1956. The lead story in that is a story titled The Lost Crown of Genghis Khan, which is a classic Scrooge story. Actually, I want to say was adapted onto DuckTales even. Then, so that one was like it's like 19, 20 pages. This was the backup.
Right.
So you did get another Scrooge story besides the little one pagers, but it was a little bit smaller in scope, but still the type of length you'd normally would find in a funny animal book, would be an 8-page story. So, mm-hmm. This one, like I said, it is especially in the context of this big double-sized issue. I'm glad we got a little bit of a smaller Bark story in there as mm-hmm. well. But mm-hmm. again, just it's the typical Scrooge thing. It's we're cheap to the point of being spendthrift, because it's okay. I want to buy this. I'm not just going to buy the land. I'm going to buy cereal to buy bits of the land an inch at a time. It's you just look at him and you're like, okay, well, he seems to be doing pretty well for himself. So he must know what he's doing.
I mean, there's no evidence for it except the evidence, right?
except the mountains and mountains of money. Quintillion cubic acres of cash.
This one hits sort of at collectors. We have all done George Costanza crazy schemes of trying to figure out if I can just get those bottles to Michigan. I can recycle them for the 5 cents, right? I mean, what made that story work is that we've all thought that.
Yep.
We've all thought this. We've all fallen into this trap. Right? If I buy enough, then I can get the Beanie Baby that I can then resell for it. It all runs through our mind, right? Whether it's selling grit or whatever it is. I mean, this setup is familiar to all the readers who are reading it.
Yep.
And then, we have it, at the end, poor Scrooge is totaling up the more than $3 million he has spent. And what is the oil that he strikes, Luke?
An old car leaking oil out of its crankcase.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. The nephews are in this one, and they, of course, are not impressed with the prospect of a 1-inch square of land. One of them says, you could raise carrots. Yeah, one each year.
There's a panel on the very first page of this story where Scrooge is beaming because he says, I don't know, suppose that square inch, we're in the middle of a diamond mine, and Donald is looking right at the reader and he is furious.
Yes. Oh no, here we go again.
Yeah. And like I said, Donald is Scrooge's fixer, but Donald's got his own problems. He's got all mm-hmm.
And I've spent a lot of time the last couple of years reading both a lot of old cheap Archie stories and a lot of old cheap Duck stories. And what's kind of amazing is even when you get, you know, themed collections, say in Archie, you know, the Winter Wonderland collection of 150 pages, how they manage to do different things with those stories. Some themes come back, but the stories are, you know, can be quite different. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, you have years and years and years of the cheapest, richest guy in the world. And they have continued to get unique, new, funny ideas out of that one-line premise. It's pretty amazing stuff.
Even, yes, and even now, IDW publishes Uncle Scrooge every month. And what the book consists of is actually not that much different from what you have here in Uncle Scrooge's Adventures. They publish new to the United States duck stories from around the globe.
That's great.
And these are not, they're not stories. Now, occasionally you do get some stories from the 70s and 80s, but these are stories from the 2010s.
Right.
A lot of them come from the Italian title Topolino, which is that's Scrooge's name in Italy. But there are stories from all over the world that you're getting translated into English. So we still get new duck stories every month. One of the books I look forward to every month, I get my box from my mail order comic book service, is that I know that's going to be 32 solid pages of duck comics.
There you go. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So we talked about each individual story here, Luke, but what did he think of the overall issue?
How can you beat it? This is, 68 pages of Uncle Scrooge comics, and all of them are hits. There's no duds in this issue. I mean, you've got, a legitimate classic with the Paul Bunyan machine, you know, a couple of really good gag strips, a very funny 10-pager with On a Silver Platter, and then a few shorter ones that are, you know, also very, very funny. This is just a great book. And I've picked up a few issues of Uncle Scrooge Adventures out of the cheap bins primarily at the used bookstores here in Greenville County,
right,
South Carolina. And yes, they're reprints, but they're reprints you haven't read the originals of. And
so what difference does it make? Yeah.
If you have, they're still good. And plus you get a new cover. An awesome Don Rosa cover on top of that. So this was fantastic.
Now, I did have one big question for you. Now, back when we were talking about detective stories a couple episodes back, you talked me out of the notion that, you know, cell phones would inherently kill private investigator stories, you know, that they just change those stories. Doesn't Bitcoin and Apple Pay and online banking, have they killed Uncle Scrooge stories? You're reading the new stuff. You tell me.
I don't think they have, because one of the aspects of Scrooge's personality is that he didn't earn his money by being underhanded. He didn't earn his money through traditional means. The reason why Scrooge will go swimming around in the vault and reminisce is that he remembers the adventure of how he got every single coin. So to him, the physical tactile money is very important, because he remembers, I got this when I was, you know, punching cows in Wyoming. I got this when I was in the Klondike, you know, when I found the goose egg nugget that made me my first million. While there are some modern stories that deal with technology, usually something Gyro invents. there is something to be said for the power of cash, you know.
Yes.
I don't know if you have ever listened to the financial personality, Dave Ramsey.
Yes.
Dave Ramsey, in addition to his financial programs, has a radio show. The intro to his show, you know, he says, you know, where cash is king, debt is dumb, and the paid-off home mortgage has replaced a Cadillac as a status symbol of choice. Cash is still king. I don't care if it's 2019 or not. Cash is king.
Well, in terms of this issue, let's make this official. The verdict on Uncle Scrooge Adventures 20, more than 50, 60 pages of top-quality content, humor, epic stories, and let's be honest, a true role model of a protagonist. I was very glad when I found this, very glad when I read it. And Luke, I'm glad to have talked to you about this. This is a quarter bin steal, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely a quarter bin steal. This is not really part of part and parcel of what you cover here. But the other great thing about this is I, as a middle-aged man, can read. I can hand this to my kids and they can read it and have just as much fun with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got a stack of, in fact, sitting right behind me, I have a box of kids' comics that they routinely go and rifle through, and we'll see them, you know, piled up in the on the end table next to the couch in the living room or whatnot. And I would gladly give this book to any of my kids, ranging my kids range from 5 to 10. And I'm sure all of them would love it.
I mean, we haven't done humor here on the Quarterbin. This is the first time. Though, and there have been a couple books that have been a little funny, but not intentionally. And we haven't done a kids book either. Yeah. And they would be tough to do.
There's plenty
but this
of
cheap one, kids this one worked. This one worked.
I mean, you know, you say this a lot on the Reading Journal that you find the old Harveys like Richie Rich and stuff like that. And there's plenty of those out there. And I like Richie Rich too. Although Scrooge would spend, you know, Rich under the table, but you know, Rich's money comes from his family, to be fair. You know, Rich is not a businessman like Scrooge is. But the difference to me is that the Disney books and the Duck books in particular, they to me hold up better reading them as an adult, but still have that childlike sense of joy about them.
A lot of the Richie Rich, though, and Archie, I mean, a lot of the Sad Sacks, a lot of those, for one thing, they're shorter. They tend to, you know, 5 pagers. You know, the typical issue will have 4 5-to-6-page stories in it. And they almost always are going for that last panel punchline with maybe a joke or two in between. But these ones are stories.
Right.
Each one of these has a plot to it. And that's not always the case in some of those other kid books, which I enjoy, which I read, which I talk about. But these ones have plots with beginnings, middles, and ends, and conflict, and resolution. And
I'm reminded of something I said to noted English podcaster Andrew Leyland a few months ago. Amazing what a little story and character can do for your comic book.
Almost like that matters.
Yeah. It's a novel concept. It's a novel concept right now. just a great time reading this. And Gladstone put out, lots of these reprints. So you can find them out there. Gladstone, was it Geppi, the guy that owns that museum? I want to say he was the one that owned Gladstone, but I may be wrong on that. I'm forgetting his first name.
Steve Geppi. He owned Diamond for a while, or maybe still does.
Yeah, and they did an Archie book at Free Comic Book Day a few years ago where they went to that museum, which I thought was really quite funny. That's but great. These Gladstone books are out there, so you can find them. Like if you're buying them from like a mail order shop or something, they can get a little pricey, but most of the time they're cheap. You know, I mean, Scrooge has his fans, but other than the originals, most of them are not particularly pricey. So, hey, you know, I mean, I tell you what, if you don't believe me, you should believe the professor because he's a licensed professional. I'm a licensed professional, but I'm an engineer. So that's if I don't stamp it, I don't think it counts. You know, I'm not sure.
But. So, did you approve of the design of the Paul Bunyan machine? I didn't ask that. I mean, I didn't know if the size to weight ratio, the tires, the issues you had there.
I don't. My stamp is not good in Cali soda, so I was not able to be consulted for that. I'm reminded of when I first got my PE's license. For those that may not know, professional engineer is professional license as an engineer. Our friend, our mutual friend, the irredeemable Shag, said to me, "Oh wow! Anytime I drive across a bridge, I'll think of you." And I said, "Shag, if I stamp the bridge you're driving on, get off of it because I'm not a structural engineer."
But Shag was obviously thinking, comic books, because if you're a scientist, you know everything. If you're an engineer, you can build anything. Any kind of engineer.
That's why I always kind of felt bad for Hank Pym, who's like, they always make a point. Oh, he's not a scientist. He's a biochemist.
Oh, like, sick burn. Now, Luke, our listeners obviously know this, but where can they find you opining about various aspects of pop culture and monsters and movies and horror and such?
Well, if you are still interested in hearing my voice after hearing me rave about Duck comics for 45 minutes, You can find my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive, which is a Daikaiju podcast. Daikaiju is Japanese giant monsters. We take a look at movies, TV shows, games, and other aspects of Japanese giant monster culture. That can be found at twotruefreaks.com. Also at twotruefreaks.com, I co-host The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, which, as the name implies, is a horror podcast. I co-host that with my brother, Jason Giaconetti, and then Two True Freak OG, Chris Honeywell, and the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler. And the other show I co-host is also on the Two True Freaks Network, and that is Get Back to the Wrestling. Finally, there's a podcast about professional wrestling on the internet. But we talk about professional wrestling, and that is myself, Jason, and the hair metal hero. So head on over to twotruefreaks.com.
I once made the mistake of referring to that as a wrestling show. Did me know?
Well, we do talk a good amount of wrestling.
Okay.
Because that's you know, that's Southern style.
Exactly.
Of course, up to the mic wrestling. We do talk a lot about the NWA and Jim Crockett and all that. Thing. We look back in a nostalgic way. We want to get back to the wrestling. If any of those sound interesting, please check them out over on twotruefreaks.com.
Always a pleasure to speak with you, Luke.
Oh, absolutely, Professor. Always in the quarter bin. I look forward to this show every time. I'm always checking the feed to see if something new has popped up, both the quarter bin and the other shows on the Relatively Geeky Network. I'm glad to have someone else out there who thinks financially the way I do about cheap things, because you know, I think we both kind of found Hoopla independent of each other, and
yes,
we were like rushing to tell the other. It's like, hey, there's free crap on here, you know.
Well, I mean, I owe you. We were at Heroes Con. We didn't find quarter bins. We found even better. Sorry, you found even better.
Five for a dollar. All I know is I sent the text, Alan, I'm on such and such block, five for a dollar books. All it comes back, I'm on my way.
Exactly.
It's like I'm Commissioner Gordon, and I lit up the quarter bin podcast symbol to the roof of the convention center,
yes,
in Charlotte.
Yes. Oh, wonderful, Luke. Well, that wraps up our coverage of Uncle Scrooge Adventures 20, bringing episode 130 of the podcast to a close. You've podcasted with Andy. Throw me in next time.
Next time, in an all-new episode of the Quarterbin Podcast,
we're going to cover a mystery book. I say mystery because that episode will be part of a 5 or 6 episode mega crossover among all of the shows on the Relatively Geeky Network, and I don't want to give away those details just yet. But I can only say this. I expect to have another guest on that episode as well, someone not nearly as cool as Luke, by the way. I can't say anything more because spoilers. But if you have any questions or comments about this issue or the episode or Uncle Scrooge or Carl Barks or financial management or the podcast in general, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and he's Luke Giaconetti. And I'll see you in the quarter bin.
The Quarter Bin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.com. .blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening.
Sir!